Anybody tells you they know what's going on in the markets, ignore them because they are lying to you. What you want to do, everybody, is concentrate on the fundamentals of this economy. So that is what we are going to do from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today, the 27th of August. And I think what you can do right about now is take that deep breath I've been talking about one more time. Hold it for a second and now let it out. Because, yes, there is still some volatility and one never does know what tomorrow is going to bring. But for now, things do seem to be reasonably copacetic. So let's talk for a moment about that favorite standby of many a politician, the fundamentals of our economy and how strong they are. How many times have you heard that, huh? We got a key indicator of the actual economy this morning, gross domestic product. So we asked Marketplace's Mark Garrison to go out and talk to people and find us, say, three numbers that analysts and economists use to figure out whether the fundamentals of this economy are strong or maybe not.
Asking economists to only pick three numbers is like asking kids at a birthday party to only take three bites of cake. No chance.
I think it takes more than three.
I wouldn't always have the same top three.
That's Michael Strain at the American Enterprise Institute and Ann Owen, a Hamilton College professor formerly at the Fed. But we can at least narrow it down to some key categories. There's GDP, of course, which we learned today grew at a 3.7% rate last quarter. Beyond that, they watch a mix of data, including a range of employment and inflation numbers. Housing and industrial production data help, too. Context is vital, says Bernie Baumol of the Economic Outlook Group.
There's been a lot of talk about wages simply rising at around 2%, but that only tells half the story. You have to look at the rise in income relative to inflation.
And with low inflation, 2% isn't quite so disappointing. You also have to look beyond the headlines. That's what Owen will do when the big employment report comes out a week from tomorrow.
Certainly the overall unemployment rate is a number that a lot of people focus on. But I think when we want to think about the health of the labor market right now, there's some really key numbers for people to be thinking about.
Like the percent of people working or job hunting, currently stuck under 63%. When Strain looks at all this and more, he sees a mixed bag.
We're not looking at growth in incomes or output that would make you, you know, wave your fist in the air and cheer. But we're also not looking at a situation that you would describe as terrible.
So the fundamentals are okay. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Okay, now you know. A story now about Iron Man, not, sadly, the movie, rather the triathlon competition. The World Triathlon Corporation of Florida has been swallowed whole by the Chinese conglomerate Dalian Wanda. Purchase price was $650 million American dollars. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams explains why a company, Dalian, that made its money in real estate and media is making a bet on sports now.
Wanda already owns the AMC movie theater chain in the U.S. It's recently bought a Swiss sports marketing firm and a portion of a Spanish soccer team. It calls the Iron Man purchase part of its comprehensive sports strategy.
So there's a possibility that they see this as opportunity for vertical integration in a completely different area in sports and entertainment.
Carl Girth studies China at the University of California, San Diego. He says the company wants internationally well-known brands like Iron Man to draw attention and people to the hotels and other properties it already owns. Wanda says triathlons are on the cusp of explosion in China. But Jeff Wasserstrom at UC Irvine is skeptical.
Well, we've heard stories about skiing being poised to explode. We've been hearing about other things, but they are real niche things, and there is a bit of oversell.
But he does agree with the company's assessment that China's middle class is ready to move away from watching popular sports to joining in. David Barry, a sports economist at Southern Utah University, says what makes triathlons appealing is that it's not just for the most elite of athletes.
Well, what we're seeing as economies grow around the world and incomes go up around the world, that there's more and more interest in all sorts of sports. One could argue this is a sport that lots of different people can participate in.
And they need gear, hotels, training space, and airtime, which Wanda is happy to provide. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Volatility, thy name is still Wall Street. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The growing migrant crisis in Europe took a much bleaker turn today. Authorities in Austria found the bodies of as many as 50 people who apparently suffocated in the back of a refrigerated food truck. It's not clear where that truck was going or where it came from, but Austria does share a common border with Hungary. And for a lot of people, those fleeing the conflict in places like Afghanistan and Syria, Hungary is the gateway to a border-free Europe. The Hungarian government isn't happy about that. They are, in fact, building a fence to try to keep refugees out. The BBC's Ed Thomas filed this report from the Hungarian-Serbian border.
There are hundreds of people passing along down these tracks and into Hungary. This is one of the main migrant routes. Their hope now is to reach Hungary, get into the European Union, and many of these people say they want to go on to Germany, to Denmark, to France, and to England.
About 1 kilometer. Yeah,
1 kilometer checkpoint. Yeah. Hungary. Yes.
Okay. Down the tracks, we met Ahmed. He's just 14, and it's taken him weeks to cross a continent.
20
days.
Yes. Syria, Turkey, Greece.
And it's a journey he's made alone, without his mother and father.
And where do you want to go to?
Go to Germany.
Germany?
Yes.
Why?
Why? ISIS.
ISIS.
In Syria.
In Syria.
War.
Do you think Germany wants you?
No.
No.
But here, there is real determination. Ali is a teenager and responsible for a grandmother who cannot walk by herself.
Whose is this?
That's my grandmother.
Wheelchair?
Wheelchair, okay.
And you've pushed your grandmother in a wheelchair?
Yes.
Where?
From Afghanistan.
From Iran, Afghanistan?
Turkey. Next.
That's thousands of miles.
Okay.
How old are you?
I'm 18.
But the Hungarian government says it doesn't want the migrants here. It says it wants Hungary for the Hungarians. It's talking of sending in the army, a commando border force, and it's building a fence 110 miles long.
This part of the fence is just coils and coils of barbed wire. It looks razor sharp, and this is the Hungarian government sending out a clear message to the migrants. We don't want you here.
And pressure is building. This is the sound of migrants at a holding camp. They're shouting, "Help us," before tear gas is thrown into the crowd. And every day, the border fence gets stronger. These workers say they're building it not just for the government, but for themselves. The worker says the refugees should go back to where they came from.
I see bomb blasting.
For Mehran, a return home would mean Afghanistan and the Taliban.
We are human beings. We are not animal. I want freedom. I want nothing other.
And that freedom is also what Zaina is searching for after a life in Syria.
We die in Syria every day, many times. Nobody do anything.
Nobody listens.
This enough. Look, the babies, the children, this life.
And so they come in their thousands, day after day.
That was the BBC's Ed Thomas, filing for us from the Hungarian-Serbian border. If you've ever used Siri or Cortana or any of the other, come on, let's be honest with each other here, gimmicks that are marketed as virtual assistants on your phone, chances are there has been some cursing involved. And therein lies what the experts call a business opportunity. Facebook thinks it can do Siri and all the rest of them one better, on a small scale at first, to be sure. For a couple of hundred users in the San Francisco Bay Area, Facebook's Messenger app will now come with a feature called simply M. It's a virtual assistant with a twist because it is powered in part by some not-so-virtual people. Marketplace's Amy Scott has the story.
Why is it so hard to make a virtual assistant that actually works?
There's something wrong, and I can't answer your questions right now.
okay. Maybe Justine Cassell can. She co-directs a project at Carnegie Mellon, funded by Yahoo, to build what she calls the next generation personal assistant.
Some of the problems are pure technical problems.
Like, it's hard for machines to understand all of us all of the time, and not just what we're saying, but what we actually mean.
In addition, I think it's hard to build a personal assistant that is satisfactory to the people who use it, which is not exactly the same as works.
Say you check traffic every day at 5, she says. You may want your personal assistant to anticipate that and do it for you. To overcome some of the technical challenges, Facebook's M will be text only for now, and actual people will help interpret requests and supervise responses.
The trainers very simply will make sure that every request is answered appropriately, and each time that happens, that's a lesson for the machine.
Oren Etzioni is CEO of the Allen Institute of Artificial Intelligence. He says that human assist costs Facebook money, but over time, the machine will do more on its own.
The holy grail here is having an open-ended dialogue, the kind of dialogue you would have with a concierge in the hotel. And when we get there, it's going to be very, very valuable.
What Facebook, Yahoo, Microsoft, all these companies want, he says, is to be your mobile portal to the internet and everything it offers. The easier they make it for you to get what you want without leaving their ecosystem, the more money they stand to make. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Well, think about a caper. A caper doesn't taste particularly nice.
Tell you what, though, it sure does smell good. But first, let's do the numbers. The long climb back continues. The Dow Industrials gained another 369 points, 2.25%, closed at 16,654. The NASDAQ pocketed 2.4%, 115 points, finished at 4812. The S&P 500 also took home 2.4%, 47 points, ended things at 1987. Strong GDP data, as Mark Garrison was telling us, and surging oil prices helped keep the rally going. Morgan Stanley advanced 3%. J.P. Morgan Chase deposited 2.5%. Long-suffering mining stocks made up some lost ground. Freeport-McMoRan had one of its best days ever, soared more than 28% today. Newmont Mining dug up a gain of more than 5.5%. On the retail front, Walmart rang up 2% today. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.19%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. There are, as you know, hundreds of wildfires burning out here in the western part of the country. Fire season started early because of the drought, and this is shaping up to be one of the worst years ever up in the Pacific Northwest. You'll notice there that I said fire season, because other parts of the country, they have a snow season or a hurricane season. Out here in the West, fire is a season all by itself. And in a lot of places, the question isn't whether there's going to be a fire, it's when things are going to burn. Marketplace's Andy Euler has that story.
The community of Topanga sits deep in Topanga Canyon in the Santa Monica Mountains between Los Angeles and Malibu. It's an old hippie haven. It's a beautiful place to live, but that scenery comes with a cost. You got to worry about nature. Beth Burnham lives on 16 acres about a mile off the main road. She's got a big house. She and her husband have horses and chickens. They call it paradise. This is also California, a land of natural disasters. But they say they're not worried about mudslides or flooding or even an earthquake.
But fire is the devastating event that will happen out here.
Will happen. Topanga Canyon is full of chaparral, shrubs and trees adapted to a dry climate, and they burn explosively. Burnham introduces me to Pedro, one of the two men who work for her, armed with a chainsaw and weed eater, cutting back dead trees and brush. This is maintenance. The hard work was done when Burnham bought the property 13 years ago. A crew worked for weeks, cutting back the chaparral to create a clear area around her buildings. That was expensive, but she knew it had to be done.
I'm fortunate to have these guys. I'm fortunate to be able to afford to pay them, and so it's a balance. Most people don't have these kinds of people or these kinds of tools. If a person has a gardener, it's more of a typical, basically, blow and go. But most people in Topanga don't even have gardeners.
Burnham would know. She's the co-president of the Topanga FireSafe Council. It writes grants to try to help those residents without as much money make their home safer. You see, for every multi-million-dollar estate out there, there's a little cabin built in the 50s and 60s. Cal Fire maintains it's the responsibility of individual homeowners to make their houses fire safe. Janet Upton, Cal Fire Deputy Director, says compliance is pretty steady. One problem they deal with now is timing. Clearing brush at the height of fire season can start fires.
And so folks mean, they're well-meaning. They listen to our prevention messages in the spring. They think, mental note, I got to do my clearance, and then they don't get around to it.
Ed Smith teaches at the University of Nevada, Reno, and coordinates Nevada's Living with Fire program. He says creating defensible space around a house is imperative, but convincing homeowners to do it is another thing.
There's a variety of reasons why people don't take action. One of them is the aesthetics and the desire to live in a natural setting.
Smith says some people also just feel bad about cutting down a tree, even though it might save more trees if they do it.
If a fire does occur, and because the preponderance of people in the community felt the same way, and you lose your forest, was that worth it?
Even those who do all they can to protect their home live with the realization that fire is going to come someday. Which raises the question, does it make sense to live out here? Whether or not it makes sense, lots of people are moving closer to the wildlands. Over the last 25 years, about 2 million acres a year have been converted into what firefighters and experts call the wildland-urban interface, houses in the fire zone. Scott Ferguson lives in a part of Topanga where his house is close to his neighbor's. It's landscaped with wooden staircases and paved pathways.
Don't sit there and worry about it, because if you're going to worry about like burning up, you should just move, you know, because the reality is it's something that's there. It's a possibility.
Next month marks the 10-year anniversary of the Topanga fire, where nearly 40 square miles burned, accounting for almost $16 million in damage. Back at Beth Burnham's ranch, she thinks about that possibility.
This is a community of someplace between 8 and 10,000 people with one road basically in and out. How are we going to all get out of here when the fire's coming down?
I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
I'm about to ask you what is, I guess, a somewhat personal question. What do you smell like? Are you a perfume person or a cologne person? A lot of people are. It's a $30 billion a year business, you know. But once you find your scent, how often do you really think about the people who make that scent smell like it smells? When I was in New York last month, I took a swing by Givaudan. It's a Swiss perfume company. I got a guided tour and a quick sniff of the business.
So hello, my name is Rodrigo Flores Roux. I'm a vice president of creation in perfumery at Givaudan in the Fine Fragrance Studio in New York City.
Let's walk around a little while. Show me around.
I'll show you my office.
Okay, good.
A perfumer's life is a little bit busy.
Wow, yeah. Look at this. Is crazy. There are perfume bottles everywhere. This is like some boudoir exploded.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
I like magazines. I like art. I like fashion. I'm a museum goer.
Do you get ideas from that stuff?
Absolutely. I am also a very visual person.
So when you sit down to build a perfume, and that's probably not the right word, build.
Yeah, you can do it.
Okay. How do you do it? What's the first? I mean, you walk into your lab or whatever it is, and you say, "I'm going to build a perfume today." What do you do?
Well, you know, you think about a certain mixture of things. So, for example, I am going to do something that has to be very fresh and masculine. So I think about something that is going to be a little bit citrusy, but I want it to have tons of lavender because lavender is going to be my theme. So you choose one or two. You mix them in different amounts, etc., in order to create something that will be pleasing, will have signature, will have memorability, and hopefully it will, you know, not only make millions of dollars, but also it will also become signature and innovative. So let me show you, for example.
Wow.
So we have this database.
Do you have, so I'm looking, there's a list of how many are there, probably 40,
in this
right?
This one just, I have 47.
47, okay.
So this is the,
you write it up.
I write a formula, etc. I push send. Chung, and it goes to the lab. So then we're going to the lab. And this is where literally the magic happens.
Okay, I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. So first of all, you will smell that.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of smell.
There's a lot going on in here.
So.
Not unpleasant.
No, it's like, well, we also have to say something there. Not of only good, pleasant smells you make a good perfume. You can use horrifically stinky scents, but in the right amount, they add something. Well, think about a caper. A caper doesn't taste particularly nice.
But when you put it
with a stingray and then with a little bit of wine and you put pepper and a touch of garlic, garlic is not particularly good either.
I need you to come cook for me. The hell with this fragrance thing. Come make me dinner.
Well, actually, I don't cook at all. But anyway, you see, we're surrounded by bottles here. Each bottle contains a raw material that smells very specific and smells very different from the one next to it. They are in alphabetical order, and they're basically 30% of them are natural, 70% of them are synthetic.
I'm going to go way out on a limb here and guess that this is completely cutthroat.
Go for it.
Completely cutthroat business.
I like that.
Right?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes. We are sharks. We are, you know, Godzillas, and we want to crush the competition, and actually sometimes we get crushed.
How does it work, though? Do designers come to you, or do you go pitch them? I mean, how does the process work?
A little bit of that, but mostly the brands, the designers, come to the houses and said, I want to launch a perfume for women for 2000. Now we're working for 2017 now.
Wow, already?
And even further. But what happens is that at this house, or the owner of the license of this house, went to other companies just like Givaudan. So we are briefed at the same time in a competitive way. And a lot of people die in the process. Some others, you know, stay, etc. And only one wins. I do have to say, it's very, very sad because you put your life there and then you're not chosen. And guess what? You do not get paid. So it's a business model that is very strange and it's a little bit sadomasochistic, but that's the way it is. And cutthroat.
Do you wear a single fragrance every day or do you switch back?
Well, I don't wear perfume at work.
Oh, yeah, of course, right? That's a stupid question.
I don't,
of course.
And actually, you know, if you do it, you're kind of frowned upon. So, but when I go out, yes, I'm a heavy doser. Empty the bottle.
No,
please.
Come on. What about that whole spray it into the air and then walk
that's
through
nonsense.
It? And
that's a waste of money.
Really?
I totally discourage. I want people to wear perfume and to own it and to express themselves through perfume. Putting it in the air is a waste of money. You might as well not wear it.
All right. Make me a recommendation then for a fragrance for me. I'm not a very, as you can see, I'm not a very stylish, fashionable
Well, you know,
guy.
It's kind of unfair because I'm completely going to tell you to wear something that I made.
That's fine.
Okay. So I will recommend you to go to a department store and smell John Varvatos Artisan.
Artisan.
It's a very citrusy perfume. It represents a memory of my childhood because I wanted to reproduce a smell of a piñata breaking and all the fruit and the mandarin crashing on the floor. So that for me is a party. That for me is Christmas, etc. And that is what Artisan is. So the smell of the piñata in Mexico, I'm asking you to go and take a look at it.
I love that. That is fabulous. That was Rodrigo Flores Rue. He is the head scent guy at Givaudan. And just because you know I had to, went out this morning, bought myself some of that Artisan by John Varvatos stuff, doused myself in it as he told me to, and then took a quick spin around Marketplace World headquarters. Here's what some of that sounded like.
Okay, I need you to come smell me.
Oh, yeah, that's quite fresh. I like that.
Yeah,
right. I wear that.
I don't think Kai Rizdal's citrus.
It is kind of fruity.
It's good for spring and summer.
I'm there. Do you think it's me? From what you know of me professionally?
I've never thought about what scent you wrote professionally.
Let's just say it was not universally liked. We've got a video of that whole thing. It'll take you about 4 or 5 minutes. It's on our website, marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, two of them actually about the way we live today. First of all, a survey out from Adobe, the software people, that says white collar workers spend more than 6 hours a day checking emails with, and get this, 3.2 hours on work emails, 3.1 hours on personal stuff. So there's that. Also from CEO Mark Zuckerberg, this somewhat apocalyptic announcement. Zuckerberg said in a post today that this past Monday, for the first time, 1 billion people used Facebook in a single day. A billion people. Oh, the humanity. All righty, we're out of here. The Dow up another 369 points today, 2.25%. The NASDAQ pocketed 2.4%, 115 points. The S&P 500 also took home 2.4%, 47 points. I would have played the sad happy music today, except A, I don't get to decide, and B, I got some complaints yesterday, too. So, anyway. John Buckley, Deirdre Depke, Nancy Fargali, George Judson, Dave Shaw, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. Our managing editor is Mark Miller. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.